All right. Welcome to the 70s Big Podcast. I'm Justin Lasek. I'm the host, writer, editor of 70sBig.com. That song is fucking great. Go to the Black Keys YouTube thing. Watch that dude. They got this guy dancing the whole time. He just gets me going. If you had your volume turned up for that, then I'm sorry I'm not sorry, but that song is great. It's fantastic. It's top three pump-up songs of all time now, along with Queen, Don't Stop Me Now. It's called Lonely Boy by the Black Keys off the new album. Go check that out. I think it's sweet. Also, we've got some other stuff going on. Fit is available on Amazon.com. Search for Fit. The Texas Method ebook, part one, is available, and I'm finishing up part two, and part two is going to give you a big, massive boner because it's that good. But today, my friends, Dr. Hartman came on the podcast, and we talked about a lot of stuff, primarily Olympic weightlifting, and it is a very sweet podcast. It's pretty cool. Dr. Hartman's a real cool guy. And this is the reason why my new goal is to push press 300 pounds. So, without further ado, I give to you the interview with Dr. Hartman.
And we're finally here with Dr. Hartman. How you doing, man?
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm delightful. I'm dandy. Today is October 27th. We got the Pan American Games going on later today, and they've been going on the past couple days. You been watching any of that?
I have. I spent the better part of my office hours yesterday watching live feed. If you ever wondered what a college professor does during office hours, it's usually silly stuff like that. But no, it's good. Real high-quality production. Very impressed with how everything's going down there. And if I spoke Spanish, I'm sure I'd probably like it even more. But
yeah.
Good video, replays. I mean, good coverage. And
yeah. I was pretty impressed with the camera angles. Occasionally they'll have that one camera angle that zooms in on the guy's face for the emotion right before the jerk, and then some of the guys will jerk and not have that pause, so we'll get like a close-up of their nose while they're jerking.
Yeah,
but other than that, it's pretty good.
Yeah, I don't know. They've done similar stuff on NBC before during the Olympics. One time they had a camera mounted like on the platform with like, you know, clear plexiglass over top of it.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So they would get a close up facial shot of guys when they would get down and, you know, approach the bar and grab the bar, and I don't know.
that with my listeners, when you say facial shot, they are giggling.
That's gonna help you. That's gonna help traffic on the site if somebody that pulls up in a search result. But
so, what do you think happened yesterday with Kendrick Ferris's clock issues? Do you think that someone changed their weight and picked him over, or what?
We are we as citizens of the United States are not well received in a lot of different countries around the world. I don't know. I wasn't there. I'm not there. I know people who are there, but I think anything they can do to maybe make the ugly Americans scramble a little bit, they're going to try to do. So there may have been some changes, right? And they may have announced it that, you know, so and so changed. There may have been a delay on the scoreboard. But, you know, they're basically saying, oh, we submitted the changes and the paperwork, and then just somebody forgot to tell his coaches. Similar things that have happened. USA Weightlifting has a kind of a sketchy track record of stuff like that. And a couple years ago, I think it might have been Kendrick, actually. I think they somehow submitted his weight wrong at Junior Worlds, and he had to lift in a different weight class than he was supposed to. And whether that's a combination of just people not dotting their I's, crossing their T's, or you know, on a bigger level, somebody trying to stick it to the Americans, I don't know. But sad to see it happen. Thankfully for him, the big meet is in 2 weeks at Worlds. So if anything, by him not taking a solid effort at his final attempt, he may save a little bit and then go to Paris in 2 weeks and lift bigger at Worlds. And we need Worlds way more than we need the Pan Am Games.
Yeah, definitely.
So we actually can get Olympic spots from the world. So it may be a blessing in disguise where he wasn't able to take it. I mean, I know he ran out with a couple seconds left to take it, but he didn't get a good effort on his third attempt. So maybe that will save him a little bit for when it really counts in a few weeks.
That's all a good point. It wouldn't be the first time that politics have cropped up in sports, but also weightlifting, because back when, you know, the clean and press was a lift, I remember reading a research article on this, and there was a lot of I guess subjective judging depending on who was lifting in the clean and press before it was removed from competition. So that's an interesting point that I didn't even think about yesterday. So
it happens. Well, I hope that weightlifting happens in every sport, but weightlifting, anytime you add a judge's decision in or things like that, it just makes it kind of muddy. But he's a good lifter, and I'm sure he'll come back and do much bigger weights here in the near future.
Yeah, and of course we have Donnie Schenkel, Sarah Robles. I don't know how to say the other girl's name in the 75 plus, and then Pat Mendez. But we won't discuss too much since by the time this airs, they will have already lifted.
Yeah,
but I hope they do well as well. I've
known Donnie for quite a few years. Let's see, probably 05, 04, 05. Came out to Wichita Falls in probably about 2004, and that was my either first or second semester. I was in grad school at University of Oklahoma, and I was still kind of coming down on the weekends and kind of around the team. But we traveled to a bunch of meets together. I was actually backstage with him and Glenn when he made his first 200 kilo clean and jerk. I think that was at 05 Nationals in Cleveland, and that was a big lift for him. I think he took second that year behind Pete Kelly. But yes, I've known him for a while, and he's just what you see is what you get with Donnie, and I wish him nothing.
What's the best Donnie Schenkel story that you have that you're allowed to tell?
I don't know. That's kind of like a $1 million question. I'm trying to think. maybe what's the least offensive Donnie Schenkel story I can tell? I don't know. You kind of put me on the spot there. If I think of something, I'll post it up on the comments of the blog. But just kind of being around him and just I don't know.
For people that don't know him, the people that just see him in the videos, and he's had some.
Yep.
Some videos recently, and he's released reading the Bible and stuff. So people, some of my commenters said that they were just put in a trance by his voice when he was talking about hand care. So what's it like? I mean, what kind of guy is he? Because we hear about how crazy he is, and he's very, I don't know how you'd say it, maybe not composed, but very almost serious.
He's very serious, and that's what makes it, I think, interesting. And because it's he's very focused, very determined. And then every now and then he'll just kind of either say something funny or off the deep end, but very honest in a way where he's not saying it to get a joke or get a laugh at everybody, but it's just very matter of fact, And he did a video interview, I think it's on YouTube or on the Cal Strength site, where he said you have to approach the bar and rip on the bar like you're tearing the head off a fucking lion. And he didn't say that for shits and giggles and jokes. He said that because when he steps up to the bar, he's pulling on it like he's trying to tear the head off a fucking lion. And I think that's what makes it, because he's so serious and focused, and he says that, and it's like, holy, you're taken aback by it. But he's a good dude, and wishing the best. And like you said, by the time this is posted, we'll know how he did. But as of today, I hope he does well. I'm going to skip out of a meeting early just to be able to catch it on the live feed.
Right. I've never had the pleasure of meeting him, but I'm sure I will at some point. He's a cool dude. Let's see what else we got here. Well, I got some weightlifting questions. We had a few questions. I just posted a call for questions. It's about 30 minutes prior to the podcast. But one of them is from Patrick Stroop, who I've talked to, and he's on the site a lot. He's pretty funny. But he wants to know what some cues or corrections are for receiving the snatch. And so he kind of rambles on about, he has the feet moving in the receiving position. He has the hip mobility to get to the bottom, but he just can't seem to get under them.
Nice segue, actually, coming from Donnie back to this, because I think one of the problems people have is they're very passive about how they receive the bar, either in the snatch or the clean. You're pulling, you're pulling up on the bar, you're pulling yourself under, but it's not a passive kind of float under the bar. You need to extend, push your hips through, and then drop down and do so with some sort of violent aggression and put the bar where you want it. So I tend to use the phrase stab the bar out of the air. So as you're going under, extend your elbows and put it in place. And as I say that, I'm demonstrating because,
Right.
At my empty office, somebody's watching, right? But literally, as you go under, it's an aggressive get under the bar, put the bar where you want it, or, you know, kind of behind your head or, you know, straight over your back, and keep it there. And it's not something that you just sort of gracefully float under. It's extend your hips, drop under. And I use the term a lot, pop and drop. And what I mean by that is, you know, fully extend your hips, and as soon as that happens, drop underneath it.
Right.
I think I mention a lot on my blog a lot. There's a really legendary American weightlifting coach named Joe Mills, and for the life of me, I can't find where, you know, he's got lots of stuff that's written about him, but I really can't find anything that he's actually written. So if anybody listening knows where I can find it, kind of direct me to it. But one of his famous sayings is, you know, stand up, jump down. And I think that holds true for what Patrick's asking there about receiving the bar overhead. Again, it's not just a floating, passive kind of get under the bar. Throw yourself under the bar, extend, you know, violently extend your elbows, and put it over top of your head and keep it there. And I think
right.
you watch
I've had in the time that I've been weightlifting, that was my limiting factor on the snatch. I think I could have probably pulled 140 over my head, and, you know, recently could probably do that too, but I just can't. Around 130, I'm not unable to really stick it in the rack
yep.
position. And I had kind of a goofy start position when I kind of first started out, and kind of tweaked it very slightly. And so I think the pull and everything are efficient. I'm real good at the second pull and getting the bar up, but I have trouble sticking it. And so my next question was going to be the problems actually like hitting the receiving position, but you kind of answered that already. And I would assume that you'd just resonate that same cue for someone like
sure.
me, right?
Yeah, exactly. I think working from the very high hang or just hang snatches would help too. Only because, you know, if you start from, and I mean by the high hang is you have, you know, basically no counter movement. So you start the bar at kind of like the crook of your hip, you know, and keep your shoulders over the bar. And then it's just, again, pop and drop. So you get your hips through and get underneath it. And by
right.
doing that exercise, either as a warm up or leading up to heavier weights and the snatch, you basically have nowhere else to go. So you finish and then you get under. Finish, get under. And the more
that makes
you
sense.
Can train, the more you can train your body, the better you're going to be. And that's, I don't know, I have lots of kind of theories about weightlifting, and thankfully I have athletes I coach, and I've been around to kind of put all these theories in place. And it's, you know, it's working up to a you know, max as frequently as possible is pretty good, but you're always going to be limited by your weakest link. So if you're horrible
sure.
off the floor, you know, you're never going to be able to fully realize your potential because what you do off the floor is limiting you. So, like in this situation, in your situation, Patrick's, where it's more of a getting under the bar, you have to work on that portion of the movement. Not at the expense of doing, you know, normal snatches with heavy weight, but spending some time just working on that. I mean, maybe that's two or three times per week and almost treat it like batting practice or something where, you know, in batting practice for baseball, you're kind of taking swings. You want a nice level swing. You want to get your hips through. You're not trying
right.
to kill it every time, but you want to have the same thing over and over and over again. And I think like a drill like that is a good way to do it. But again, not at the expense of lifting heavy, but just really focusing on that, on receiving the bar over and over again.
Right. What kind of weight? Would this be something where you just kind of progress up and wait to use, or what kind of sets would it be, like doing doubles and triples with it and
yeah.
hitting it with something lighter than what you would be snatching and working up to what you can, or what would your strategy be
yeah.
with a
now,
practice session?
Good question. For some people who are very, very, very fast under the bar who aren't very strong, they're going to be able probably to use a slightly maybe higher percentage of their maximum because there's really nowhere to pull. You're just starting in that hang position, and you're just getting under. For somebody that's, you know, maybe much, much stronger, they're able to lift, you know, they can squat and pull much more than they can actually snatch. They may actually have to use a lighter percentage of what you would think just because they're training that movement. I guess without knowing, you know, specifics, you want to find a weight that's heavy enough to force your body to go underneath it, but at the same time light enough that you can do so consistently for maybe like five sets of two,
Yeah, that makes sense.
You know, nothing special. I mean, you're not doing it for, you know, for 30 sets or anything. But if you want to get good at something, you have to practice that part. And I think you can break the lift down to parts and work on that part. It would be the same thing as if somebody was very weak off the floor, and every time they cleaned or snatched and the weight was pulling them forward, you have to go back and work on that, because no matter how good
you know what, that might be Patrick's issue, because the last thing he said, I didn't read it because I was going to lead into a question. He said, I almost always miss them forward and never back. And so, of course, like off the floor, the mechanics could change what happens throughout the rest of the movement. So you're saying what were you saying about the weight pulling them forward?
So if it pulls them forward off the floor, so it's
right.
Never getting the bar back into the correct position to finish and get underneath it. So even though because it's always out in front, so even though he may think it's from the top portion and receiving the bar, but if it starts at the very, very, you know, beginning of the lift, it's never going to fully get back to his hips and to allow him to get underneath it. So that may just be a matter of, you know, watching some video or getting a coach to tell him exactly what he may be doing wrong and then fixing that. So if he fixes his start position off the floor, it may come back to his hips better. And then he may be able to receive the bar with no problem. So that's the other tricky part. And that's kind of what, I guess, attracts me to weightlifting and I don't know, why I'm still involved with it is you're never finished, you know? And it's similar to like a golf swing in the sense that even the best golfers in the world still work on their swing every day. And as soon as they stop working on it, they stop being the best golfer in the world.
Weightlifters
are there. Yeah, and their wife hits them over the head with a golf club, and they really go in the shitter. But it's something that you don't get to a point where you just kind of say, oh, I know how to snatch. I mean, yes, you do. I mean, you kind of know like what you have to do, but I don't think anybody is ever finished like learning how to snatch. You're always tweaking it. You're always maybe trying to do something better or faster or add weight to the bar. And that's kind of fun. That's the fun side of lifting for me anyway.
Yeah, and there's so many variables mechanically that can, like for example, I got kind of bored teaching squat, press, deadlift, and stuff like that because it's not difficult to me. And obviously the Olympic lifts have a lot going on in them where strength can alter positions or lack thereof. You know, of course, like the bar path or just different kind of mechanics. And then you got different types of body dimensions. So if you have a person and they have several things wrong with them, let's say they're like kind of the standard weightlifter that might be listening to this or on the strength training internet community, would you start from the floor up because the bottom of the lift could interfere, or what would you triage just generally speaking without a specific example?
I tend to start top down. So I start from the hang position, and then over the course of over the course of a single workout, but over the course of a week or so, lower the bar down. So they start from the high hang position where basically they're finishing, they're getting their hips through, they're catching the bar overhead in the snatch, or they're receiving it on their shoulders in the clean. Over time, I teach like a counter movement, so where they're lowering the bar down to about mid-thigh, pulling it back to that hip position, and then finishing, and then, you know, lower it down to about the knee, and then finish, and then by then I kind of teach it from the floor. Only because, you know, if you're weak in any one of those points, you're going to have problems. But it always has to come back to that second pull position. And if you don't know what that position feels like, it's going to be impossible to get it there. So I like to teach it there and kind of reinforce it there. So it's always coming back to that position.
Do you teach a I've never been coached by Dr. Hartman for your listeners, but do you teach a contact of the belly in the snatch and like contact on the thighs of the snatch, or I mean the clean?
If I'm working with a guy and like a male lifter and comes in, I tell him basically on the clean, you want to get it as close to the bottom of your ball sack as possible without hitting your balls on the lift. So basically it's as high on the thigh as possible. On the snatch, it's going to be above your junk, your genitalia there, right? Yeah, you have a
pubic zirconium, if you will.
Yeah, there you go. You don't want to, some people really slam it off their hips, and different lifters can get away with that. But for clean, it's below your junk for a snatch. It's above your junk as high on the hip as possible. I personally, the higher you can get it, the better. So for the clean, it's always going to be on your thigh, but the higher on the thigh, the better position it's going to be. And then for the
right.
snatch, it's not really belly per se, but it's kind of like the crook of your hip. And if you
right.
can get it in
so
the air,
I'm asking you like a Socratic line of questions because I'm going to result with a final question.
Sure.
How would you determine someone's snatch grip? Is that based off of any kind of
eyeball? That's my best measurement. I've seen different things where it says you should measure the distance from your elbow to your cervical spine, and then that's all kind of bullshit. Just have them grip the bar. Have it, have them bend over slightly at the waist. I mean, just very, very, very slightly. So they have a
sure.
nice little bend in their hip. That bar should sit in there. If it's too low, they need to widen their grip. If it's sitting too high, they need to bring their grip in a little bit. For the snatch, I tend to, even if somebody's been snatching for a while, I tell them, go out as wide as you feel comfortable. And then go out about maybe two or three more fingers than that, and that's probably your good snatch grip. It's not a real natural position, that snatch grip, but the wider
sure.
you go, the better you're going to be for the most part. And I'm sure somebody will prove me wrong and show me, six different lifters who do better with a little more narrow grip. But I think
sure.
The wider you can go, the better. I've recently, I've had, I've coached probably three lifters within the last maybe month or so who are all bigger guys. One's a college thrower, shot put and discus. Other two are just bigger guys, about 6'4". And guys like that, 6'4", 6'5", they're really limited by the length of the barbell. So even
right.
though they're all the way out on the collars, I think if they had the ability to get a longer barbell, they would actually do better. I just think, wider the better. So go as wide as you feel comfortable, go a little bit wider, and that's probably pretty close to where you need to be. But I just eyeball it for lifters and make sure it's going to contact their hips in a good position.
The reason I'm asking all this is because when I started lifting, I had a little bit wider grip than I do now. And I started noticing that I was missing my racks a lot, and which is probably due to the lack of stabbing, like we talked about earlier. But I also couldn't really ever hold the weight overhead because I had a lot of pain in the radial side of my wrist.
Gotcha.
And I have short arms, by the way. That's
yeah.
impressive tall. I have shorter than average arms for a guy that's 6 foot tall.
Yep.
And so I was having pain in my wrist. And so what were you about to say?
No, I think that kind of throws. So if you have, even if you're, you can't go by height necessarily because it's going to depend more on arm size. So if you do have shorter arms, I think you have to, again, look in relation to the hip. And if you're having pain in your wrist when you receive it overhead, it may be how you're receiving it overhead, not necessarily the grip of the bar overhead. So if you're, and just like when you teach the press or anything else, I mean, where that bar is on your palm is going to play a large role in just, how,
right.
how securely your grip is and where it's comfortable at. So that's always an issue too, but
I've been receiving with the hook grip.
Yep.
Is that something you even worry about, or is that preferred, or
it sort of just takes care of itself. I think I,
okay.
In the clean, I definitely teach lifters to lose the hook.
Sure, yeah.
In the snatch, if they can maintain it, I think that's great. I think it's probably better. But if not, it's okay to let it go. The problem with letting it go is then it kind of rolls back into the upper part of your palm, like into your
okay.
wrist for your knuckles. And then your wrist kind of bends over, and now you're in an awkward position. So if you can
yeah.
maintain your hook in the snatch, your wrist is probably in a little better position to receive it.
And, okay, so I bumped my grip in maybe about a finger width, maybe two at the most. And that also helped my back angle to be a little more vertical, along with a little shift in my positioning and of my feet and stuff. So if anyone's interested, I can show the difference in starting positions and can show it to Dr. Hartman later and see what he thinks. But so basically what all that means is that I was lifting more efficiently, and when I was in Australia in July, I snatched 130, which is
Nice.
My PR. So I didn't really do the Olympic lifts recently before then, and I had a hip injury before that prevented me from squatting or pulling, period, and I smashed pretty much my PR at, you know, 10, 12 pounds lighter body weight by doing this. So everything's, you know, pretty regular on the snatch, and I can routinely go up and hit 120 kilos very easy any day, and then the next attempt at 125 is pretty regular, might miss it one out of three times or so. But what I've been noticing recently, aside from the problem at the top, is that I've been whacking the shit out of my pubic symphysis, and that's pubic zirconium for you guys at home.
Yeah.
Is that just something, like, should I feel that, or should I think about trying to pull that higher? Should I adjust my grip, or what do you think?
If you can get it higher, so you're above your pubic bone, that's going to be better.
Okay.
Then I guess you maybe run into maybe you start hitting your iliac crest or something. So you're always going to kind of hit something. If you're hitting it that hard.
I wouldn't say it's all the time, but there's some reps where I whack it and I'm like, oh, shit. And it's not as bad as it used to be.
Oh, no, it brings a tear to your eye. Well, I know for myself, it can bring a tear to your eye for sure if you hit it the right way. It's just it's very much a stabbing sort of sensation. I think if you can bring it a little bit higher, I think that will probably be a little bit better. But it's important to think of the vertical movement of your hips more so than the horizontal. So maybe this is a cue I teach quite a bit by getting your hips through. So when you really finish your hips are coming all the way through, but you have to do so as the bar is moving vertically. And maybe you're just focusing a little bit more on the horizontal, call it full penetration, so to speak, of your hips going out and not so much up. And maybe that's just a quick little maybe over-analysis of what's going on. As long as it's not, you know, as long as you're not black and blue, I don't think it's a real issue there. And more importantly, probably, is that you're not looping the bar around by doing that. That's the only problem with really slamming the bar into your hips, is it tends to make the bar kind of swing out and loop around. But if you're not doing that, then it's just, I don't know, it just kind of comes with the territory, I guess.
Yeah. I think lately, in the past couple workouts, I may have been looping a little bit. Because I've had some inconsistency at the top, but we kind of addressed that also.
Sure.
But this leads into another question. Mobility work has gotten more popular, especially online with Kelly Starrett and stuff. Do you find that you routinely have to work on the internal rotation ability of lifters, or are most people usually capable of a decent snatch? Or what are your thoughts on improving that? Is it more of a coaching thing, or can people really benefit from improving their internal rotation via mobility work?
Depends when they kind of come in to see me in the gym or just where they are in their training career. So if you take somebody that's been doing, this is a typical progression. So somebody, you know, high school that they lift for high school football or some sport. They go off to college and then they start looking at more in terms of just bodybuilding and strictly hypertrophy. And then maybe they gravitate more towards powerlifting and just lifting heavier weights. And then they finally come around to weightlifting. If they follow that typical progression, they've probably done lots and lots of just, you know, bench pressing, lots of, you know, they probably have limited mobility, like in the thoracic region and shoulder region. So they're going to benefit more from some specific mobility. If it's somebody who's just, you know, who's kind of just dicked around for a little bit and hasn't really followed a set program, they should be able to snatch, you know, the first day without much problem. So it's kind of an individual thing. I think more mobility or spending time on mobility work is the more you can do kind of like in the earlier part of your training career or training life, I guess, the less you need it later in your career. So I think where the mobility workout of the day and Kelly Starrett stuff is really beneficial. It's for the guys that have just beat themselves up silly for the last, you know, 5-10 years, is that now they can really benefit from doing additional mobility work. But if you take somebody new or you start them out on the right path, if you can, I mean, snatch and clean and do so at a, you know, fairly high frequency, I don't know that there's a great need for more mobility work. But for the people that are beat up and have issues, they definitely are going to need it.
That's a good point, because you know, Dr. Kilgore, who we both know, and I'm sure you've seen him lift. He has been weightlifting since he was 11.
Yeah.
And he may not be able to kick his forehead like Wee Man, but he's similar body type to Wee Man. But he may not be able to kick his forehead, but he has pretty good mobility. He can, at any point in his life, hit a rock bottom snatch and then lose it behind him with his, you know, with the shoulders rotating all the way back. He could lose it back and not have any injuries as a result of any of that, you know, at any point in his life. And he's, I don't know, what is he now, 52 or something?
Oh, he's, 50-ish for sure.
So he's been consistently lifting and he's, you know, benefited from that. But that's a good point about, I guess the accumulated effect of not doing mobility, or maybe more specifically the accumulated effect of getting feet down and jacked up maybe time and not like.
I think if you, there's probably a correlation between jackness and lack of mobility at a certain point. But if you always.
When you say jackness, do you mean like swollenness jackness, or do you mean like getting jacked up in a negative way?
I mean, swollenness. I'm probably lean toward the swole factor.
Okay.
Only because by doing, you know, everybody's, even the most, you know, non-conceited person in the world still wants to be able to train the stuff they can see in the mirror. So that usually means, you know, tons of chest work, tons of, like, you know, front, you know, everything's in the front of the body. That's just going to kind of pull you forward into like Cro-Magnon man, so to speak. So then when you eventually go back to snatching or doing anything, that's where you're going to have the biggest issues. But if you always snatch and you always clean and you always kind of do exercises that require a high degree of mobility, I don't think it's something you need to spend a lot of time on. And Kilgore would be a good example. I think he got on the path of Olympic weightlifting at 11, and I don't think he veered very far off that path. I mean, he competed up through juniors and into, like, you know, collegiate ranks, and then through seniors, and then into the masters. He didn't really have, to my knowledge, he didn't have like a big period of time where he was just trying to get swole or trying to do something else. I think that helps him tremendously in his ability to maintain mobility at 50 plus years of age.
Definitely. What do you think about? I've seen some of your programs. Obviously, I have your ebooks that you've written so far, and you can find those. What is it, drhartman.blogspot.com?
That was kind of the original address, and then I spent $6 or whatever, and I bought the drhartmanblog.com.
Oh,
drhartmanblog.com, Dr. Hartman blog.
And so that's his website, and there's training articles, there's some ebooks on weightlifting, and some really interesting stuff, and usually we'll link some stuff back and forth. But my question is pertaining to, well, I guess we'll look at it from the perspective of building strength for the sake of weightlifting, and then just building strength in general.
Sure.
In the podcast with Glenn the other day, he talked about how he really loves the push press, especially for weightlifters, but he kind of resonated that into saying that the push press was something that if you're strong in the push press, you're going to be strong in everything. And he just was like, really, he was all about it, basically. He's like, if you got a good push press, you're going to have a good press, and you're going to have a good bench and stuff. So as far as weightlifting strength, push press, I'm pretty sure, and you just correct me if I'm wrong, that you have that as a regular part of your program and not so much just the standing press. Is that correct?
That's correct, yeah. I don't have anything against the press, but I think just the fact that the push press is a little bit more dynamic. I mean, you have to have some kind of coordinated movement to basically your dip and drive and pressing overhead has to be somewhat coordinated. So I think it transfers over to the weightlifting movements because, again, it requires some coordination. You can use a heavier, because it's still an accessory exercise to, you know, putting heavy weight overhead, so like the snatch
right.
and the jerk. But it allows you to use heavier weight, which is, again, kind of an ultimate goal. There's going to be less opportunity for you to kind of lean back and get into a weird position when you press overhead. I think maybe this week on the 70s big, you mentioned like very few people actually have good overhead press technique. And I watched your video when you cleaned it and pressed it, and that's an example of, I think, great overhead press technique, right? You don't have tons of layback. You're not staring at the bar as you press it up. You get it past your face, get it over top of your head, and then you're locking out. And I think a lot of people, when they do just a regular, press, call it military press, standing overhead press, whatever, but when they do the press, they have the tendency to lean back. They kind of can't get the bar out of the way of their face. They wind up staring at the bar, and it's just not very efficient. But you ask them to push press, and they do a much better job of kind of retracting the neck, getting the bar past their face, and then getting the bar back overhead and pressing it up. So I think that just that little initial dip and then drive back up that gets the bar moving, it really helps the top portion of the lift, which is what we're trying to kind of train anyway, just trying to support heavy weight overhead. I like the push press, though. I really do. Kind of going on to what Glenn said, though, about if your push press is good, then your press is good, and your bench is good, and jerk is good. I mean, I don't know very many people that can push press 300 pounds that can't squat at least 400 pounds. So I think if you – not that they're related in any way, but I think if you're strong in like big kind of full-body movements like that, I think that's probably the key, I think you'd be hard-pressed to find somebody who can push press 300 but squats below 300 or even 350, So I think the bigger the compound, movement, the better return, so to speak, for everything else.
I recently push pressed 275. I was going for a double, but I missed. What's that?
I said nice. That's big lift.
And I believe it or not, I'm sure you can believe it because it's not that crazy, but I didn't really push press until recently, and I've been consistently pressing since, January of 2009.
Yeah.
And the first day that I push pressed, so maybe about a month and a half ago, and that's not the first day ever in my life, but the first day in recent training, I was working up and doing around 245 for doubles. And then, so I was like, okay, I want to push press 275. That's the next goal. And so the day did 275 and 265 for a double right before it and 255 before that. So I was pretty elated and missed the second one because I got lazy. But now, after you say that, now I want to get to that 300 push press so that I can have that. I moved my, what's that?
I was saying you can push press 300 pounds overhead. You're a pretty bad dude. I mean obviously you can do standing press when you're here or whatever, but I mean you might be the strongest guy in just about any gym in the country if you can walk in. I mean there's exceptions, Cal Strength and then Westside Barbell and a few other places. But if you can take it out of the rack and push press 300 pounds overhead, you're doing something right, that's for sure.
I'm sure that you would agree with the method of doing this, but when I push press that and when I clean everything, when I press everything, I clean everything now. I don't do anything out of the rack. It got kind of standard for a while to like do it out of the rack, but I just, first off, it's way more cool cleaning.
Yeah.
And secondly, it's just, there's more to it. And for me, the clean's not difficult, but I had to start power cleaning pretty hard as I was tired because I had clean and jerked prior to doing that 275. I was kind of tired already because I clean and jerked at the 152. And anyway, so when I push press, I chose to move my finger with that about a. Okay, let me start that over. I moved my grip out about a finger width or two from my normal press grip because the press grip mechanically benefits from a more narrow grip. Would that be on par with what you would say, or what kind of grip would you use, or would you coach, like a similar to the jerk, or a little more narrow in the jerk, or what?
Yeah, it's a good question. Honestly, I probably haven't spent enough time thinking about that. I would be inclined to say more similar to the jerk position, but I agree 100% with you in that when you just do a press, you're better off with a little bit more narrow grip. And I think that, you keep a nice vertical position in the forearm and everything else. I don't know. Somewhere between your press grip and your jerk grip is probably going to be your ideal push press grip. Especially if you're doing it with a clean first, that means it's coming off your shoulders. So it has to be, you know, so it can't be so narrow that you're going to impede where your hands need to be because of your shoulders, but it also can't be so wide that it's difficult for you to kind of get it into the palm of your hand and
right.
press it back overhead. So yeah, somewhere between your press grip and your jerk grip probably, but I would probably lean more towards your jerk grip.
I would assume you would agree with this, but just for the listeners, the one thing that I see some trouble with whenever I'm at a workshop or whatever is with the push press specifically is that the bar may be in the person's hands. I just had to correct someone the other day on this, just a guy in the gym, so that he didn't hurt himself. But the bar not resting on the deltoids, because the dip drive is all dependent on the hips and the legs actually driving that bar up, and if the bar is being held in the hands and not on the shoulders, then that force is going through the trunk, through the shoulder, down the humerus, through the elbow, through the wrist, all the way to the hand, and then to the bar, as opposed to just the entire trunk and having a good surface area of the bar on the deltoids. So, I mean, are you on par with this? I mean, I assume that's the way you would coach it,
and
obviously, logic.
And not even from from an injury standpoint, that's, or not injury, but just from a, you know, don't hurt yourself standpoint, I think that's correct. But if you think about somebody, you'd have to be a very, very strong individual if you can support, you know, a couple hundred pounds out kind of there in like no man's land where you're just holding it out in front of your body. But when you do well, Andre Chmerkin, he won the gold medal in 96 super heavyweight, and he was within maybe a final clean and jerk attempt at winning gold in 2000. But if you pull up any YouTube videos of him lifting, he really didn't rack his cleans. I mean, he didn't have the flexibility to put them on his shoulders. So he would clean it and just kind of hold it there in his hands and then jerk it. So he's a very rare exception. But if you picture somebody doing a push press where it's not on their deltoids and it's holding out and kind of in space there, when they dip down, their elbows are going to kind of rotate back toward the body. It may not be that big of a change, but it's going to happen just because as you drop down, that weight's coming with it. So it's going to force your elbows to kind of rotate toward your body so that when you drive back up, you're already kind of at a disadvantage, right? So now it's further out in front of you, so you have to kind of push around your face and back over your head. Where that if you start on your deltoids, it's just a matter of kind of, you know, pulling your chin back and then pressing straight up.
One comment by an astute listener or the skeptic might be, well, if the forearms aren't vertical because your elbows are up to have the bar racked on your deltoids, then won't that not be efficient for the drive? And the answer to that would be, well, the dip drive itself gets the bar to, I don't know, what would you say, around eye level at least, driving the bar up to at least eye level? Maybe forehead, maybe top of the hairline.
Yep, I agree. So, I think that's the thing.
Yeah.
You're getting it off your deltoid, and then as you're doing so, you're able to kind of rotate your hand around and get underneath it. I've been teaching the jerk for the last, 18 months or so. If you can get your elbows underneath the bar prior to jerking, you're going to be much more, much more successful in the jerk. And if you're, and since the Pan Ams are just kind of fresh in my mind, there was in the 94 kilo class, there was I believe the guy who finished second, he's from Venezuela. If you watch his jerk, where his elbows are and his forearms are in relation to the bar, I think that's probably, in my mind, an ideal position prior to the jerk. And I think you can push press the exact same way. So your elbows can be underneath the bar. And it might take you a while to kind of get the flexibility to get comfortable in that position. But if you're dipping and driving the bar on your shoulders, you can keep your forearms fairly, fairly vertical. So then you're pressing it straight up. There's not I guess it's easy for me to say because I can get into that position. But if you can't, I guess you should probably start working on getting there and then doing your push presses like that.
Right. Just watching Venezuela. He's the guy that, if anybody was looking at the stuff that we were posting, he's the guy with the awesome haircut.
He did
he,
have awesome
he looks
hair.
Like he looks like hair. Some guy, somebody's lawyer.
Yeah. Completely
but
different
he,
lawyer hair, but the head coach at the University of
Tennessee.
It just
looks like a clean cut. Yeah, like Like you'd be wearing a nice suit, and he'd be wearing a nice ring on his finger, and he'd shake your hand, he'd smile, and you'd be like, "This, I'm safe with this guy."
Yeah, and he'd give you his business card before he shook your hand. Like he's that guy. Like, here's my business card, and you know, I got your back. Yeah, I can definitely see that. He did have nice hair. Yeah,
there's a video up, and I posted it on what's today, October 27th. It's on the little recap I did of the sessions thus far. So I just watched him jerk, and so you're right about that. And but it's also important to note that the bar is resting on his deltoid, so it's not that it's just. It's not like just resting on his collarbone. It's not just resting on the bone of his shoulder. Early on, my jerk position was one that had kind of like shoulders rolled forward and elbows down. And so body dimension, I just want to point this out because I had some trouble with this. Body dimension will kind of dictate that position as well, or flexibility or whatever. But in the time that I started jerking and there wasn't an adjustment made in the beginning, that stress, I don't know if you'd consider just pushing down. I think there was too much in my hands than on my shoulders. And so my acromioclavicular ligament was stressed, and I wasn't able to jerk over 120 for the longest time. And in my first meet, I had never jerked over 120 in training leading up to that and hit 140 like a power clean jerk, but just, you know, with adrenaline and kind of warming the shoulders up. But it was a very difficult thing to deal with in training. So I would say, yeah, I agree with you that it's efficient. And then, but I would also say, just make sure that the body dimensions are there and stuff like that for the person that doesn't have a coach. Because, like, if you're working with someone, then you're going to be able to see that and tweak it for good, or tweaking something that may not be as efficient or make it more efficient. Whereas someone by themselves, I just know that people have a tendency to drive their dick into the dirt, whether it's programming or technique. And so I just caution people, because that was a problem that lasted for at least 6 months for me, probably the majority of the time. I actually retooled how I jerked a little bit before I went to nationals so that I was actually able to jerk in training where I previously wasn't. So, but
I think, like you said, it's going to depend on, you know, on the anthropometry and flexibility, but if the closer you can get to that position, and actually I pulled up the recap that you had posted today on 70s Big, and I was watching the 94. All three medal winners have excellent jerk position, and I think that it could be very similar to a push press position where it's elbows underneath the bar, bar on their deltoids, and then just pressing straight up. But the closer you can get back to that position, so everyone's going to be a little bit different, but if you kind of know what you're shooting for, I think that's definitely going to help.
If you look at our Venezuelan homeboy and you see that his hands are right outside of his shoulder width, would you say that's a good hands right outside shoulder width? He may have had like an inch between his hands and his actual shoulder, like the girth of it. Would you say that's the kind of a target for someone that's trying to teach themselves a jerk?
Yeah, I definitely would. And like I said, I think even for like a push press position, I think it can't be any more narrow, just because you're going to get kind of crowded in there. You'd have to have, if you're a really skinny guy and you don't have a lot of, you know, kind of mass in the upper body, you can probably get in a little bit closer, but I think you're going to be somewhat crowded. So just outside shoulder width, maybe like you said, 2-3 finger lengths beyond that, I guess that's a great jerk position. But I also think that's probably a very applicable push press position as well.
I got you. Now, do you work with people? I guess my question is, would this be more of an advanced thing, or would you do this with someone who's more new to the sport, where the clean grip is different than the jerk grip, and there's an adjustment? And the most severe case would be Debaya. Is he a French lifter?
Yeah, he is.
Debaya? He's like a robotic, like, meh, and his hands, like go out really wide, almost to, like, where my snatch is. And
that is, I think that is just something, I think somewhere along the way, he probably had trouble holding the bar overhead. Like, he just had weird either flexibility issues or positioning issues where he had lack of stability overhead. And I think he moved his hands out, and then it was a little bit more comfortable. So I think he might be more of an exception. I tend to keep the hands the same, and if anything, maybe only move them one or two fingers out a little bit wider. You know, depends on a lot. At initial flexibility levels when they come in and stuff, but you know, the body is a good example. And I think there was a video kind of floating around on Facebook or YouTube, and it was a Chinese female lifter. I think it was China. I think it was China, who like moved her hand out probably like 4 inches between cleaning the bar and receiving the bar on her shoulders. I think she just kind of figured out a way to do that, and then she was jerking. It looked like almost like a snatch grip when she got it overhead. I think those are rare exceptions. I think for the most part, keep your hands in the same place or one or two fingers out, and I think you'll probably be much better off.
Speaking of just some random lifters and observing their stuff when they jerk, going back to Kendrick Ferris, he was squatting his jerks there for a while. Seemed to have maybe some instability when he went for it. Maybe, was that Pan Americans last year when he went for 200 and something where he lost the jerk? Or was that Nationals last year? Or the Arnold?
I think it was the Arnold. Where he the bar either came down on him or he just was in a weird position and I remember the Arnold, he had some issues with that.
And so this past meet, when he lifted yesterday on the 26th of October, he kind of went back to his more split/squat thing where he's pretty low, but he has this split. Do you think they went back to that as a result of some inconsistency with the actual squat jerk?
I don't know, and I'm hesitant to say one way or another. But obviously,
sure.
I think it was a. I don't think it just sort of happened. You know, I think he trains enough, and he's been doing it long enough, and he trains enough throughout the weeks and months between, you know, Arnold's and now, that he was probably working on doing it a little bit different, whether that's because of lack of stability overhead or he just felt more comfortable. But he was doing I think he called it a splot for some time. He probably did that for 4, 5, 6 years, and then it's only in the last 2 years where he was really squat jerking. So maybe just going back to what kind of got him up to a top national level, but then also an international stage, and then I don't know, maybe just thought he'd run with that. But I have a real hard time believing somebody who jerks as frequently as he does with training would just sort of haphazardly just switch in the middle of a competition. So I'm pretty sure they were working on it for one reason or another.
Have you met that guy? I mean, have you met Kendrick before?
Long time ago. He was still a school age lifter going into juniors. And it's just kind of telling stories now, but back in the day when I first got to Wichita Falls, I moved out there to work with Dr. Kilgore and to work with Glenn in the Regional Development Center. We had a really good stable of junior lifters. We actually, when I was coaching there and with, you know, with Glenn, and more so Glenn, because he was he was recruiting and bringing him in, and I was just sort of helping him out every day and along the way. We won junior nationals 3 years in a row, which is, I don't think that's been repeated since, but as a
awesome.
very new team, we won juniors 3 years in a row. At the same time, Kyle Pierce had, before it was a USAW High Performance Center, but he had his gym in Shreveport. He basically had a group of lifters that were very similar in age, very similar in ability, about the same as the guys in Wichita Falls. So we would have little, like in wrestling, like high school wrestling, you have like dual meet competitions where it's one school against another. We would have little competitions like that. At the same time, Houston had real good lifters, so we would have these little kind of mini meets where it was mostly lifters from Wichita Falls, Shreveport, from Houston. I haven't met him or haven't talked to him in forever, but back when it was like him, this guy, JJ, a kid named Tully, Cody Gibbs was there, and maybe like two or three others from Shreveport, and they were all really good lifters. It's funny, though, that Cody Gibbs is still lifting, I believe, but of all those kids, Kendrick was the youngest, I believe, of the bunch, but he's also the only one that kind of stuck with it for the full duration. And now he's the top American, one of the top two or three American lifters in the country. So I think it speaks to his consistency and the ability for him to stick with it for as long as he has. I would imagine he probably started lifting probably that center opened in like 96 or 97. And I would think he probably started about 98. So he's probably been at it now for 12, 14 years. I mean,
awesome. Well, my question was going to say, like, if you had met him recently, like, how jacked is he? Because he's looking pretty jacked these days when they had him in the warm-up room and stuff.
He's wearing his
pink tee.
Yeah.
I appreciate that out of guys.
Yeah, I saw that. You know, I have a wife who's extremely good-looking, and she gives me fashion advice, and I take it because, you know, she's my wife, and I have to. And she picks out maybe not pink, but like she'll push me towards some purples and some other things that I won't typically buy on my own. But if a good looking girl is telling you to wear it, it's probably a good thing. And I'm not sure how that relates to Kendrick wearing a pink shirt, but I do appreciate a guy that isn't afraid to wear pink or purple or anything else.
I'm not really into fashion either. My fashion kind of revolves around tank tops and flannel, depending on the season.
Yeah, I think every picture I've ever seen you in on the website is a tank top or flannel. And the one time we were at the Texas State meet together, I believe you were wearing a 70s big shirt. So just rotate between those three things, and I think you're in a good position.
So were you much of a competitor in weightlifting, and have you competed recently? I mean, I know that you're a student of the game, so to speak, but is it something that you still play around with, or how's training going these days, or what?
Yeah, still training. My wife and I, we had a baby, he's 15 weeks old, so for the last 15 weeks, it's been just get in when I can, and even for maybe the last 2 weeks before he was born, it was kind of, sketchy at best.
Sure.
I competed for 3 years, trained since high school, all the way up through college. I was working as a college student assistant, kind of college strength coach, and I was teaching people how to do the Olympic lifts variations, power clean, power snatch, jerks. So then I really started to develop a real appreciation for the lifts, and I wanted to learn how to do them more, how to teach them better, and how to do them better myself. So that led me into just Olympic weightlifting, which led me out to Wichita Falls, which at the time was really just like an up and coming mecca of Olympic weightlifting. And I competed during the time I was out there from like 01 to like 03. Listed at collegiate nationals like 1 or 2 years, but nothing really beyond that. Never qualified for nationals. Qualified for the American Open, but didn't lift just because it always fell during like final exams, and I was in grad school at the time, and whatever excuses I had for that. But not much of a competitor. Still lifting, training. I recently started playing around with kettlebells. The gym I train at and I coach at is Black Box Strength and Conditioning in Fort Worth.
Let's give a shout out to that.
Yeah,
is that
Dutch
primarily on that, or?
Yeah, oh, Dutch is, yeah, he's, he and his, is, he'll be married here in about a week. So he and his wife own that. He's the brains behind the operation. And, so Dutch,
what's their website? Do you know the website?
BlackBoxFW.com.
Black Box FW. Dutch is a cool dude. I've seen him at some meets. CrossFit stuff.
He's a former CrossFit Games competitor, and I think he finished in the top 10 a couple years ago. And before there was a lot of money involved and stuff. So then ever since then, I think he is just now solely Olympic weightlifting, and he's a extremely good lifter. He finished fourth at nationals this year in the 69 kilo class. I think at 27, 28 years of age, coming in fourth with only like 2 years of actually training for Olympic weightlifting.
Right.
He's doing something right. Let's put it this way. If he would have started when he was 12, I think there would be another lifter we were watching at the Pan Am Games this past week.
Yeah. He's a cool dude, too. So blackboxfw.com. What's up, Dutch, if you're actually listening. But he's a cool dude. And congrats on the marriage. I think shortly after they got engaged, I was doing this online. I was in his thing where he's kind of correcting people's weightlifting technique, and so he showed everyone the ring because it had been about a week or so after they got engaged. So
nice.
I saw the beginning, and now I heard about the end, I guess, of the engagement.
Yeah, but he cool. he when he opened up shop, I've only been back in Fort Worth, a couple of years now. But when he opened up shop earlier this year, he sent me an email and said, "Hey, just come check it out." And we get along real well, and he's been gracious enough to let me train there. And then just kind of opportunity sort of presented itself of, "Hey, you want to start coaching again?" I said, "Yeah, sure, yeah." I really enjoy coaching, so now I have a place to actually do it. And so I'm training, and this is actually the first time in my life that I have a full set of like kettlebells at my disposal. I've always kind of dicked around with like a kettlebell and maybe did some swings or some snatches. So the last maybe month, my training has been still barbell. You know, I still always do some barbell lifts first. But I've been throwing in a little bit more kettlebell stuff at the end, and not really sure why. Just there, maybe, and it's new and it's shiny and interesting. But
so what kind of stuff are you doing? Like, are you doing a 5-minute conditioning deal? Are you doing some like windmills and stuff that work the trunk, or what are you messing around with?
It's let's see. Thus far, my routine, if you want to call it. I'll do something with the barbell. Maybe I'll snatch, I'll clean, I'll squat, press, pull something. Maybe two exercises. Just kind of I pull something out of my ass and I do that. And then maybe like Mondays I'll do like heavy swings. So I'll take like a heavy for me, I guess. Maybe like a one handed like 32 kilo swings, just for like sets of 10. Yeah, you know, multiple sets of 10 each hand.
Right.
Wednesday same deal, something barbell focused, and then. I'm not going to actually sit for it, but I kind of want to do the RKC snatch test of 100 snatches in 5 minutes, just kind of like a man, like a good man test, you know?
Yeah.
So at Wednesday I do 24 kilo snatches, and I'll do some ladders where I do like, actually I don't even think of ladders, but I do like 5-4-3-2-1 and alternate hands and get some work in. And then like Fridays, it's kind of the same, just barbell stuff. And then, maybe like kettlebell clean and push press, and then some lighter snatches for some volume. So yeah, nothing crazy. No, I'm not juggling kettlebells or anything, but or I'm not doing it 10 minutes at a time either. It's just something new.
We should you guys should have them, because you guys did a power clean meet recently.
Yeah.
And did that turn into just a clean meet, or was it actually power?
It was. Well, I think I sort of kind of presented it as, hey, let's do a power clean meet. And then we kind of started thinking about, well, what if we have somebody who wants to split clean? Or what if we have, you know, how are we going to judge the power clean? So we just called it a clean meet. But then it sounds like a drug-tested meet. So I like to call it the power clean meet, because people kind of know what you're talking about if you say power clean
meet. Yeah. So it's a clean meet. You're like, oh, it's a very polished meet.
Yeah, it's very clean. Yeah, we have a bottle of bleach out on the platform, and we keep everything sterile. No, it was good, real good time. It was the first meet at the facility. The gym's only been open for May, so what's that, 4 or 5, 6 months? But it was a good, probably had 35 lifters, and it went very, very quick, very smooth. We had 4 sessions. Biggest lift was, final attempt was a guy named Jonathan Barnett, who's a really good 77-kilo lifter. He had 182 on his shoulders racked and couldn't quite stand up with it.
Damn.
Weighing about 80 kilos. So we have some good lifters training there. And
damn.
A couple guys came over from Dallas. And, the final session. So we actually, it was kind of a unique setup where instead of doing our sessions based on body weight, like a normal weightlifting meet, we did it based on bar weight. So that way we didn't have, you know, so we could have in the final session, the minimum weight to get into that final session was, like 135 kilos, so right about 300 pound clean. I think we had like 5 or 6 guys in that final session. Yeah, and the final successful lift was like 170 at about 80 kilos, and then the final attempt was 182 at 80. So yeah, I mean 400 pound clean at 80 kilos is your move.
That's pretty cool. You've heard of the tactical strength challenge, right?
Yeah, I know you guys have that on your site, and it.
Yeah, we just kind of played around with it. I think that we should do some sort of, because on the site we will sometimes have challenges. We haven't done them in a while because my friend Gant was kind of big with that, but you guys, you know, with the gym and everything, and you've been playing around with kettlebells. You should have some sort of like weightlifting / kettlebell deal where you. You do a snatch or you do a clean, and then the next event is the 5-minute kettlebell snatch, like you've been messing around with. So
yeah,
kind of like the tactical strength, because tactical strength is I don't know what comes first. I think it's pull ups, deadlifts, and then the kettlebell snatch for 5 minutes.
Yeah, yeah, I think that sounds about right.
But I think a weightlifting kettlebell thing would be kind of interesting.
Yeah, we could definitely. Honestly, we program the kettlebell stuff just as in our general strength and conditioning classes. I think I'm the only one that's really doing many snatches and stuff with it. And,
sure.
Again, it's just sort of something I thought was kind of cool. But I'll bring that up at our. We don't have meetings, but you know, next time I talk to Dutch tomorrow morning, I'll mention it to him. We actually.
But if you guys have some events, and then if you had an event like that as an example, and then we did it on a challenge on the site as well, so yeah. It'd be not just whoever is competing at your gym, but also all the goobers that are reading the site nationally or internationally.
Yeah.
That'd be kind of neat.
That would be pretty cool. Something we do once a month that's pretty similar. Nick Horton, the Iron Samurai, he has a weightlifting gym out in Portland, Oregon, and his site is pdxweightlifting.com. Once a month, we have a competition with his gym, and it's basically we pick an exercise. One month, it's a competition lift. One month, it's a general, you know, either strength lift like a front squat or, you know, something along those lines. And everybody in the gym does that lift up to max on that day. And then we basically run it through like a Sinclair formula, and we figure out whose gym wins on that given lift. We video it, put it up on the Facebook page and stuff. So yeah, we've done some real similar stuff like that. But
let me run something by you.
Sure.
I got this friend Saul. He's a mechanical engineer.
Yeah.
And I haven't met him in person, but Brent has, and he lives in Denton, so you may actually meet him at some point.
Yeah,
they'll bump down and do some lifting, but he's real interesting. He posts on the site, and we've talked on chat and stuff. He's one of my favorite people because he's very objective about everything, and he will, if I disagree with something, then he will listen to me and actually take that into consideration, and if it's logical and it makes sense, then he'll change his mind, and the opposite is true as well when he makes points, so... He's real interesting to talk to, but he's also got this weird sense of humor because he'll say something that's dickhead related, but it's almost like so subtle that it's hard to tell if you think, you know, you don't know if he's serious or not. But he's been working on this meet, and it's pretty much done, but we spent a lot of nights staying up till like 3 in the morning talking about this meet. It's called the Herculean Weightlifting Meet, and it's a lot of pulling. It's a clean and press, it's a snatch, it's a clean and jerk, and then a deadlift. And then the way it's scored is, I'll have to double check this because I'm just doing this off the top of my head, but it's a geometric mean that has to do with body weight. So it's not an arithmetic mean, it's a geometric mean. And he's got this, like, he uses the coefficient that he looked at, and he tweaked the coefficient so that it was related to the Sinclair, but it still favored heavier guys because he's like a lighter dude, about 180 pounds, but he doesn't want it to favor lighter athletes. Specifically so that they always win, so he like made it have some incentive to weigh heavier and stuff. But anyway, it's what would you think? Imagine doing clean and press snatch, clean and jerk, and then a deadlift. Oh, there's only 2 attempts of each. You don't get 3 attempts.
Yeah.
You get 2 attempts, and I think that the ruling, I don't know if he has it, is that you have a mulligan, so to speak, to attempt to do a third attempt on only one of your lifts if you choose to use it. So it's a 2 attempt meet. With 4 lifts, that's one method of doing it. So what do you think about that so far?
I think if you can find a way to judge it and fit it into
Dr. Harvey, don't even start with the judging because the ruling is what we spent all that time on. He went to USA Weightlifting, USAPL, and he went to those sites looking how they judge those things.
Yeah.
Brought, like, copy-pasted those, looked at, like, the past judging, how it used to be in, like, the Olympics and the IWF back in the day and with the press and how, like, Rivetto would have, like, the press be in the CrossFit Total type meet.
Yeah.
And so we talk about this shit so much, I don't even want to get into it. But, yeah, there's very specific rules. There's basically a rule book. Oh, and I forgot to mention that in the event of a tie, there is a cheat curl off.
Oh, nice.
Or maybe, I don't know if it's strict.
If it's a tie, maybe just arm wrestle to see who wins.
Yeah, because it's not you know, there's no weight classes. It's based off of this fucking score thing. So the curl is how you have a curl off at the end. Within, I don't know if it's a cheat curl or if it's a strict curl. Because a cheat curl, you deadlift the weight up, and then you can basically like RDL it over and then kind of like power clean it, but you can't re-bend your knees. So
I think,
anyway.
Yeah, with the exception of the curl, I think I'm on board with just about everything. I think I don't want to be the one to judge it or organize it, but I think if they ever pull that off in Denton, I may drive up for that.
And also, there's another method of doing the meet where two of those events are selected at random, and you get three attempts on each one.
Yeah.
So that's another type of meet. So it could be clean and press and deadlift, or it could be clean and press and clean and jerk, and you get actually three attempts. So that's like another way of doing it. And I think that's kind of neat, and we might do that on the site because it's kind of like you have to be generally strong in everything, not a deadlift specialist, not just a weightlifter, not just a presser or whatever.
Yep.
But anyway, that's a little something Saul's been working on. It's like his baby, and just wanted to run that by you.
No, I think it's cool. I think it's good to have passion in life. I think if you're passionate about something, I think good things will happen. Now that we're talking about that, I think it would just be cool just to have an old school weightlifting meet with the but the press was a clean and press. You had to get the press command, but so you had to clean it to your shoulders, wait for the command, then press the snatch.
Yeah,
and
I think that's legitimate. I think that's how he has it set up, and I think the way that Rip. I'm sorry.
I think you maybe like dress like in like 1972 like era garb because that's when the press was eliminated, and I think that would be another potential. Yeah, like maybe some like headbands and kind of like how you dressed when you.
I smell a DVD sale.
Yeah,
I smell a DVD based on this meet. I want to get a singlet that has a Speedo at the bottom that doesn't have any leggings.
Yeah,
that shows off my nipples, and I got hairy nipples. I got a hairy chest, so I want a singlet that's like that.
Look at I know you're. I don't know if you're a fan, but I know you've mentioned some pro wrestling stuff in our email exchanges and stuff. Kurt Angle used to wear a type of like singlet when he used to wrestle professionally. But if you look at when he wrestled like in the Olympics, it was like a crisscross type singlet. I think that's what you need to look at. The official name is probably it's like a Greco-Roman type deal. And I think you can probably modify the bottoms to be a little bit more Speedo-ish as opposed to, like, shorts. But that's probably the ticket right there.
And if I can get this whole thing in a red, white, and blue American flag and wear a handlebar mustache, then I think that would be business.
I think that's DVD. That's we'll get that in print for Christmas. Yeah.
I'll get Chris to do it, too. And Chris weighs, like, 290 pounds because he used to weightlift, my buddy Chris. He mainly powerlifts now, but he used to weightlift, but he's got a pretty good press too, so he would do decently in the press part.
I want to see a singlet that had like an American eagle on it, like red, white, and blue.
They make those.
Yeah, like a screaming eagle, like coming down.
I think on a custom singlet they have. Oh, CustomSinglets.com, I think, is the site. And I told one guy that I would send him a shirt if he got this wolf singlet because there's a wolf one.
Yeah.
And he was asking what he should write on his shirt that he's wearing under it because he used to wear a shirt in powerlifting.
Yep.
And I told him to write the word irresponsible on it, and that's what he did.
That's awesome.
So there's Custom Singlets has some absurd stuff that you wouldn't even buy, like even as a joke. Like there's a lot that have, like fire department insignia on it and stuff, and there's just some really weird ones, like a bright, like neon orange singlet with weird cartoon character on it. There's some really weird shit on it. But going back to that press, the press is does have some standards because that was kind of hard to judge, back in the day.
Sure.
And I think we were still not discussing this because. Saul, of course, doesn't like my stretch reflex, but I pointed out my stretch reflex on my press. I wouldn't allow that in competition. I would want a dead stop press. But I'm not for the dynamic start as far as like the hip whipping before it actually comes off the shoulders because that makes it difficult to judge, and that was the primary reason it was.
I agree with you.
And so, but there are some standards as far as like the armpit cannot lay back more than the gluteal. So you can't have more layback than that as a straight line down. And so it's kind of difficult depending on how fast the press is. But there's a little bit of standards, and I'd like to do an old-fashioned weightlifting meet. Maybe we can get that set up. Sell the DVD.
I'm on board with that. And I think I have to run it by Dutch, but, I mean, I think we could probably do a meet like that maybe sometime in the future at Black Box.
I'll come over for it.
That's no, we need to. In all seriousness, we need to get you out back to Texas. I know you lived here for a few years, and you have friends and people you probably want to see. But we need to get together and do either a seminar or a workshop, either based on the teachings of FIT, based on things that you and I deem cool for talking about, or whatever, and we can do
sure.
it at Black Box Fort Worth. Pretty
yeah.
proximal. You can fly in, you can drive in. I think it would be a good get you back to the Lone Star State, and I think it's also a good location for a fairly big workshop or seminar.
Yeah, and we talked about it before, so we're going to have something coming up probably in the beginning of the year. Plus, I have Jacob Cloud. I don't know if you know who that is, but he lives a little bit south, and his ass I need to hang out with because he apparently can barbecue stuff up really well, and he
yeah.
likes beer, and he likes
yeah.
being hairy and stuff, so he's
yeah.
cool. And then I got to punch Saul in the stomach because he's been deserving that for a while. So, yeah, there's definitely a lot of incentive in the Texas.
And, yeah, we'll get you out here, and for your buddies and for anybody else who may be, fairly local or willing to travel in, Saturday, February 4th, I'm going to host a little workshop. Basically, it's overtraining and recovery. I kind of have a reputation, lack of a better term, for knowing a thing or two about overtraining and recovery. My master's thesis was involved in overtraining, and I've researched a lot of recovery methods. So basically it's going to be a one day, maybe like a 4 or 5 hour workshop, a little bit of hands-on, but some theory and just basically wrapped around overtraining and recovery, things you can do in between workouts, things you can do to improve the next workout. I'll have more details about that on my blog in the future, but if it's cool with you, I'll probably send you a link to it, and maybe you can throw it up.
Yeah, definitely. That's something that I think that we should talk about probably in the next podcast, since we're filling up quite a little time slot here. And not to mention, the 105s are about to come on, or somebody.
Oh,
yeah, 105.
Yeah, I have to. Yeah, and it's close to my meeting. I have to run here, and then I want to duck out and watch Schenkel rip the head off.
But yeah, well. We should, yeah, definitely. We should, we'll have you back on the podcast again anytime, of course, but maybe dabble in a little bit of overtraining and recovery questions, saving the bulk of the content for the workshop, of course.
Yeah, no, I'm looking, look forward to it, and I think always good to chat with you, and, if nobody else likes it, I enjoyed our talk here for the last hour, so
yeah.
Hopefully.
There'll be people listening. There'll be people listening, and they'll hate themselves for it.
They
know who they are.
They're never getting this hour back ever, so I hope they like it. But yeah. Justin, always
good
always
talking
to you.
Appreciate you coming on the podcast, and we'll see you next time.
Sounds good. Take care.